Hello and welcome back to Builders Trust Podcast. I'm Patrick Clare, Field Safety Consultant for Builders Trust of New Mexico. Today we're going to be discussing top 10 mistakes to avoid when completing and filing OSHA 300 logs. You probably already reviewed your OSHA injury and illness record keeping forms from last year, filled out and posted your OSHA Form 300A on the employee bulletin board, and started a new set of record keeping forms for this year. However, you might want to review the following list of common mistakes that we find when reviewing OSHA injury and illness record keeping forms for our participants. So February 1st, 2025 is the deadline to post your organization's OSHA 300A logs, and March 2nd is the deadline to submit electronic records to OSHA. While the form itself is only a few pages, the associated OSHA regulations governing the completion of the logs is well over 25 pages with multiple letters of interpretation to guide you through this endeavor. Here in no particular order are 10 lists of the most common mistakes made on the OSHA injury and illness record keeping forms. Number 1, no case number appears on the Form 300 and Form 301. See column A for the Form 300. This is where you would enter a case number, which is a unique number such as 01, 02, 03, etc., that you make up and assign to each recordable incident. But be aware that this case number must also appear on the corresponding OSHA Form 301 Injury and Illness Incident Report on line 10. And if you utilize an equivalent form in lieu of the OSHA 301, such as a workers' comp first report of injury form, this case number must appear somewhere on the alternate form as well. Number 2, check marks are entered in both column H, which is the days away from work, and column I, which is job transfer or restriction, under the classify the case section of the OSHA 300. We see this happen often whenever an employee has to stay off work for a few days due to injury and then comes back to work on light duty for a couple of days. It seems logical that you would check both columns, right? However, the proper procedure in this case would be to check only one of the two boxes, the one with the most severe classification, which in this case is column H, days away from work. The reason you do not check both is that at the end of the year, when you tally up the final numbers, you would actually show two incidences instead of one, and your incident rate would be artificially inflated. Number 3, the employer does not enter both the number of days away from work in column K and number of days with job transfer restriction in column L of the form 300 when an employee has both. This is the contrasting problem to the previous one. Even though you would only check column H under classify the case in the example given, you would still list the corresponding number of lost work days in column K and days with job transfer or restrictions in column L. So remember, in any incident involving both lost work days and job restrictions or transfers, even though there would only be one check mark in column H, there would be days away entered in both columns K and L. Number 4, the employer mistakenly enters the number of scheduled work days missed or with transfers restricted duty instead of the number of calendar days missed in columns H and I of the OSHA Form 300. This is often due to the record keeper doing things the old way when we used to fill out the OSHA 200 form. OSHA now requires you to enter the total number of calendar days missed or on light duty in these columns. not the number of scheduled work days missed or on light duty. So even if an employee who normally works Monday through Friday with weekends off is injured on a Friday and the doctor says he's not able to return to work or is on restriction until the following Monday, you would still have to count the Saturday and Sunday that the doctor said they could not work as lost or restricted work days. Number 5. Incidents that should be recorded as an illness or instead being classified as an injury under column M. If an employee suffers flash burns from welding, would you classify that as an injury or an illness? It would actually be classified as an illness, entered in line 6, titled All Other Illnesses. Incidents that occur and are cumulative in nature, such as flash burn, sunburn, noise-induced hearing loss, and cumulative trauma disorders, are generally considered as illnesses, whereas injury incidents typically result from a single exposure or event. Number 6, incidents affecting temporary service employees working under contract for an employer are not entered on the employer's OSHA injury and illness records. The OSHA standards require you to enter all recordable incidences on logs suffered by an employee if you are directing their day-to-day activities. This is typically, although not always, the case where a company contracts with a temporary help service or employee leasing company, the exception being when the temp services are leasing or leasing agency is also supervising the actual work being performed by their workers. Number 7, recordable injuries or illnesses are not entered on the OSHA Form 300 within 7 calendar days of notification about the incident occurring as required by OSHA. Typically, employers know about such incidents on the day they occur, and that is when the 7th day a calendar day count begins to record the incident on your OSHA Form 300 log of work-related injuries and illnesses. But in those cases where the employer does not learn about a recordable incident until a few days after it occurs, the 7 days begin on the day they found out about it happening. So don't wait and update your logs once a month or even once a quarter. As I so often see, keep them up to date within a week. So don't let them go over a week. Number 8. Employers often underreport the total hours worked by all employees last year on the OSHA Form 301. That's the summary of work-related injuries and illnesses. The total hours worked by all employees at the establishment during the corresponding year must be recorded on the form. So see the right hand side of the form under establishment information. This is important because under reporting your hours worked will make your incident rates artificially high. Under reporting is usually due to the employer forgetting to count the hours worked for all employees working at the establishment. This includes not just workers on the line, but also all salaried positions such as supervisors and managers, employees in support functions such as engineering, accounting, purchasing, or human services and human resources, and even the big kahuna himself or herself. So if they work at the site and are injured, that incident would go on your log, so you get to count their hours work too. Number 9, the signature certifying the accuracy of data on the OSHA Form 301 is not that of a company executive. So if you're the site safety manager, HR manager, or office manager, you most likely do not meet the definition of a company executive and therefore should not be signing the particular form. OSHA defines an executive as the company owner if the company is a sole proprietor or partnership, a corporate officer, the highest ranking company official working at the site, or the immediate supervisor of the highest ranking person at the site. And number 10, an employer does not maintain OSHA injury and illness record keeping forms for their company because they mistakenly claim the small employer exemption. Okay, this one is not actually addressing a mistake on a form. It addresses people who mistakenly think they don't have to fill out the forms. The OSHA standards say that an employer is generally exempt from maintaining these forms if their company has 10 or less employees throughout the previous year. There are two operative terms here. The first one is all, as in all of the previous year. You must look at your peak employment numbers throughout the entire year, and if that number has more than 10 at any time during the previous year, then you must keep the forms the following year. Also, keep in mind that this is saying the total number of employees working for the company. You may employ 10 or fewer employees at your particular site, but if there are other establishments within the same company, for example, manufacturing within the multiple facilities located throughout the state, you must count the total number of all company employees, not just the ones at your particular facility, to see whether or not you qualify for that small employer exemption. So there's the list of commonly encountered when reviewing OSHA injury and illness records. While you may consider some of these findings nitpicky, they are all citable offenses nonetheless. The mistakes could actually result in a higher than necessary incident rate for your establishment, which could have very negative ramifications. So take a few minutes to check your OSHA injury and injury record keeping forms for the last 5 years. And that's how long you have are required to maintain them and fix any mistakes you might find. Well, that's it for today. If you have any questions, you can call us at 505-347-3477 or visit us at our website, builderstrust.com. You can even download our app at the Google Play or Apple Store. But thanks again for listening in today. I hope everyone has a great day and be safe.